You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce the Earth Station Trek crew, Keith Johnson.
I am fully functional.
Veronica Daschle.
Hi.
And we're joined by some special guests this week from Elaine and Matt Watch TV. It's Matt Sweatman.
I'm with Starfleet. We don't lie.
And Elaine Sweatman.
Hi.
Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hey, welcome. Hey.
Thank you.
Now, you guys are here because recently on Elaine and Matt Watch TV, you did a rewatch or a watch for the first time of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1. And folks who listen to our show know that we've done recaps with you guys before from Enterprise and the original series seasons, and now you're up to Next Gen. So we thought it'd be a good time to, you know, re-examine and reevaluate the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation, especially because we have Elaine on who had never seen it before.
Wow.
Right. Never.
So, Elaine, was Next Generation everything you dreamed it would be?
It was what I expected it to be.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I was already aware that there were going to be some clunker episodes, and just to go with it, and that with the promise that it's going to get better as we go on. And so I'm just along for the ride. So, yeah, I mean, there were several episodes where I was like, okay, yeah, whatever, you know, but even like the, even I don't really mind bad episodes sometimes though. I mean, I watch Doctor Who, there's bad episodes of Doctor Who and I love them. So, I mean, bad episodes don't bother me sometimes. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing about episodic TV is that if you like the characters, you have a bad episode, you have a couple bad episodes. It doesn't matter because maybe next week's going to be a great episode. It's a little tougher for me in the streaming era, where if a season goes against you, it's hard to come back from, you know, and it's hard to rewatch that whole season, you know?
Yeah.
Now, Matt, had you seen Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1 before?
Yes. I wasn't even 18 when I saw a number of those episodes because I saw them on first airing. The fact is, only one of the 172, is it, episodes of Next Generation that I failed to see on its first broadcast the first week.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So had you seen Next Gen Season 1 since 1988?
Oh, several times. I used to watch them religiously in reruns. So the first few seasons in particular, I've probably seen a dozen times or more. So these episodes I knew very well. But I hadn't really watched them in about 10 years or pretty much since I've been in a relationship with Elaine. So actually... Mm-hmm. Well, that's more than 10 years.
that didn't sound right.
No. More like 17, I think.
Bringing people together. Yeah.
The first season is one that, I mean, I understand the flaws, but it's one that I'm kind of partial to because when I was growing up watching it first run, my uncle, before the Next Gen was done, he had the Columbia House collection of the first and part of the second season of Next Gen. So those are the ones that we had on tape. And when in that time frame, if you had something on tape, you watched it 100 times. You know, so I saw those episodes many, many times. And I liked them. Not all of them, but I liked them. Veronica, have you seen Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1?
Yes.
Okay.
Do I remember most of them? No.
It'll come back to you.
It'll come back to me when you're talking about it, yeah.
We won't quiz you on episode titles.
But. No, please don't. Please, I mean, no, even shows that I religiously watch, I don't know episode titles.
I can provide that.
Keith, had you seen Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1?
Absolutely. I started watching Star Trek when I was around 5 or 6 years old with the original series. And so I had watched it. And yes, I'm one of those guys who used to play the name the episode game with his friends who could, you know, as soon as you see a planet or hear the music or whatever, if Kurt's wearing that green shirt, who yells out the name of the episode?
Right.
So yeah, I was ready for TNG and Matt and Elaine, I've told this story before with the other guys on the show. I was living here in Atlanta. I moved here from my home, in Chicago. So I went from Texas to Chicago and it just so happens that the TV I had blown out the day TNG was premiering. And so I actually did that thing that used to be really common. I called whoever the heck it was at the time, Rent-A-Center, Aaron's Rents, or whatever the crap it was, and ordered this big screen at the time, 25-inch television. TV shows up. TV looks like it's something from a Flophouse Motel. It's literally got cigarette burns in the top. I look in the back. The power cord looks like a rat's been chewing at it. And the color was interesting. But that's how I saw my first episode of TNG. And that's a fan.
Now, before we get too far into it, we've got a few comments here in the comments section. Tiger Blade 2002 says, Captain, I'm since here. And then Sci-Fi Queens says, so looking forward to tonight's episode.
Yay!
Welcome, and welcome, Wayne.
And then she also said, hello, everyone. And
hello.
Star Trek Generation first season was a challenging season for me, but I understood they were reintroducing Star Trek. And I think that's a good place to start because, I mean, yes, they had the job of making a new Star Trek for the first time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Kirk and Spock and Bones. New characters. And I mean, that really could have gone different. They could have done a reboot. They could have done a wholesale reimagining of Star Trek. They could have done something that was in the same era as the movies and reuse all those costumes and sets and things.
Yeah.
Instead, they went 100 years into the future with a very different crew. I mean, do we think they made the right choice there?
Yes. Yeah. Because we've seen that when they attempted to do the bringing it in at the time of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and then jumping into the future, works much better.
Yeah, and I think it also allows just enough connective tissue so that you can have connections. As everybody knows, of course, McCoy was still alive. Mm-hmm. So he was in the first episode. You know, Kirk was still known by everybody. And so I think things like that actually helped with Sirius. And I think it's a good point that you raise Sci-Fi Queens and Charles, because I remember when it came out, I think the only thing in modern times we could come close to thinking about with the reservations might be the new Star Wars movies, The Force Awakens and so forth, because it is almost impossible to overstate how fraught this thing was as a project that could fail in so many ways. Most of the original series cast were like, it's going to suck without us, especially Shatner. People said you couldn't recapture the magic. People wanted the Spock. They wanted the McCoy. The ship was weird to some people. It was. And then Roddenberry had to do something which was unheard of for a science fiction show coming back, which he went into syndication, basically, because he couldn't get a network to back him. It was an incredible experiment that could have failed in a whole so many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I mean, one thing about the Star Trek, fans have always sort of grabbed onto the design lineage and the technology of Star Trek advancing. And part of that is because they kept going into the future. You know, in 1987, the ship is going to look more advanced than it did in the 60s because it's 1987. You know, that's something that we don't. That really hasn't followed through in the new shows now that really since Enterprise, where they started jumping around in the timeline, but everything still looks modern, you know, no matter what time period you're in, everything still looks more advanced than the original series. But that's something that the spinoffs, you know, Next Gen and onward didn't have to worry about because, I mean, you're supposed to be more advanced, right?
Right.
Yes.
And it makes sense that the original series looks old fashioned because in the universe, it's old fashioned. A couple of comments I wanted to grab real quick. Sci-Fi Queen says 100% the correct choice.
Yeah.
And then Tiger Blade 2002 says, I spent the day of the TNG premiere stuck in an elevator. Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah.
That is a story you're going to have to share with us on Facebook. I want to know if you can.
What jumped out to you? I'll start with Elaine. What jumps out to you from Next Generation? What was something that stuck in your mind?
One thing I did notice when we were watching the first few episodes, and it evened out, obviously, because there are so many episodes in the first season, because I'm like, are we there at the end yet? No. Okay. How many episodes are there? There are 26. I was like, oh my God. But anyway.
Old school.
Yeah. But I remember saying in the first episode or two that Jean-Luc Picard, he was grumpy. And I'm like, I don't like him. He's grumpy and irritable and mean, and he needs to settle down. And he did eventually. They all got their groove and were fine. But that was something that was pretty apparent in the first few episodes. They didn't have everything figured out yet. Or like Deanna Troi, her hair, was it going to be up, frizzy, down? You know, it's like, what's she going to wear? It So that was kind of interesting to see that evolution a little bit just in one season of a show.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Troy started off in that cheerleader outfit.
Well, and then in all the special feature things, we heard the story about 50,000 times about how originally she was supposed to be Tasha Yar's character, like, swapped. And I read today that apparently if she had stayed that, her character's name was going to be Macha Hernandez. I was like,
what?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, she was going to play Latina.
Ma'am.
That's 1987 mindset where, like, she's dark. She's dark haired. She could be Latina.
Yeah, you know? No. And I'm glad they did switch because I can't imagine the two of them being the other way.
Absolutely not.
Well, okay. I can imagine Marina in the security head of security role. I can imagine Marina doing that. Mm-hmm. I can see Marina doing that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see Denise Crosby playing the empath though.
No. Mm-mm.
But I haven't seen her in much of anything other than Star Trek either. That's
true.
So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And 48 Hours.
I haven't seen that. Elaine, I wanted to know how much you having seen Picard, the series, affected how well you accepted him in the first season. Like, do you think that you would have been like, no, he's a terrible character and he's never going to improve, or? But because you knew where he was going to go.
Yeah, if I had started out watching it. Well, I maybe if I had watched it when it first aired, like when it was on TV the first time around. But by the time we were watching it, it's like watching TOS for the first time, which I've done recently. I was aware enough of it that I already knew who everybody was.
Right.
And so it wasn't like brand new, completely new characters to me. It was just... Oh, I know he gets better than that. You're ridiculous. Stop it.
Well, it's a choice to, I mean, essentially Patrick Stewart was like filling the shoes of William Shatner, of what he had been on Star Trek. But William Shatner is an incredibly charismatic actor, and Captain Kirk is an incredibly likable character. And it's like, well, what if he's an older man and a jerk? Yeah. You know? Like, daring people not to like him. Matt, what's something from season 1 that jumps out to you?
The general naivete of the and that's one reason why I chose that particular quote to want to open up with it, because it's said with all sincerity. It's not meant as a joke. It's not meant in any ways to be sarcastic or facetious. They literally thought that. Their Starfleet doesn't lie. And I think Gene was so pushing this idea of what Starfleet and humanity could be.
Yes.
It was in its most extreme form in the first season.
That's
mellowed out a lot as it went on for the betterment of the series, I believe. But it's very apparent in this first season that it's just a general naivete. I mean, you have kids on the freaking ship, for heaven's sake. You know, it's it's just this idea that that humanity could be this pure. I think it's best that they did compromise that quite a bit.
It's one thing that it kind of bugs me about the way Wesley Crusher was written. I've said this on the show before, but he's written like he's 11 years old,
right?
Not like he's 16.
So
he's very which I think is a disservice to Will Wheaton. I think they should have. It'd be more interesting to see him written like a 16-year-old who's in this environment, and not like Will Robinson's age. You know.
That's very true. And Matt, following up on what you said, I think that's very interesting that you say that, because that's true. And the unfortunate truth is Gene Roddenberry started sliding his health, and he died, you know, during the TNG years. And as his health went down, he became less involved with the show pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And he brought in some of his old gang, like DC Fontana and some of those other people. But in time, they all kind of faded away. And that's when Rick Berman and Brandon Braga took over. And you're right, it became a little less idealistic, because there were some fights. As you know, Gene Roddenberry wanted no conflict with his crew. Basically, humans didn't have conflicts. And that's why it's a little more stilted. And so you didn't even have the friction you have between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. He didn't want conflict. There'll be other episodes. I won't do any spoilers, but there'll be other episodes throughout the series where somebody's parent dies or something. A kid's parent dies and Roddenberry's like, well, in the future, the kid won't feel death like we do because they accept it. And they're just so cool. Like, what the heck are you talking about?
No.
Yeah. He was a little bit too idealistic in odd ways.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of comments. Sci-Fi Queen says Wesley was written like... And that's true. That's true. And then Sci-Fi Queens also said, Kirk didn't have to deal with families on the ship. Picard did, and Picard didn't like kids.
Yeah.
So what do we think about having families on the Enterprise?
I have done lists and participate in discussions on Facebook, like the things you most dislike about Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think families on the Enterprise is the single worst decision in the history of the franchise, in my personal opinion.
Wow.
Because it's another thing where Gene Roddenberry thinking it's futuristic. And they talk about real life things such as when people settled the American West, they took their kids and stuff. Mm-hmm. But those wagons settling the American West didn't turn around and fight in a battle. The Enterprise, for all that they want to claim it's not a military, that same ship, they turn right around and fight the Borg. And they go, hey, Gianluca, there's some Romulans. Can you go check them out? And there's kids on the ship.
Yeah.
So I personally, I think families was the worst decision in Star Trek history, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think they were going to use the ship separation more as an excuse so for that they win the battle if they had foreknowledge of it, not that they really ever have. but they also got away from separating the ship anyway, so it was just too inconvenient. But in one of the special features, they made a comment that this was intended to be like a 30-year mission. So I'm thinking, okay, so your 16-year-old kid is still going to be living with you as your kid, and he's 46. talk about leaving the nest late. I mean, like,
nah, I think there'd be more like that goofy kid who stole the shuttlecraft. I think there'd be more of that going on.
Comment real quick from Tigerblade 2002. I'm still confounded over having kids on a starship, like watching The Love Boat with phasers.
Exactly, Wayne.
And see, I disagree with you guys. I think it's cool. There's a lot about The Next Generation to me that feels more advanced than what we've seen since The Next Generation through DS9, Voyager, and so forth. Because they went out of their way to make the ship more comfortable. It's more like a floating city or a starbase that moves. You know, so they're on a long range, you know, mission with a thousand people or more on the ship and families and schools and all that stuff. But and the ship feels more like you'd see like a fern in the corner. You know, like you feel like there should be a fountain in the corridor, you know, rather than a military vessel. It feels more comfortable. And to me, that feels more advanced than something like the original series or even say the Enterprise E or the Defiant later that feel like they're going back to that original Star Trek mold of it being more like a battleship.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that if they didn't then send them into battle. Like when they like the episode with the neutral zone. And they send them to the Romulans. I'm like, if somebody gets killed, kids get killed. And that was the only thing I had a problem with it.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. You know, they send them into battle. The Borg haven't gotten introduced in season one, so I won't talk about that. There's episodes where people get killed, and I'm like, geez, how many kids just died in that episode? All the neighbors said.
They did a good job lampooning that on Lower Decks when Rutherford's in the simulator, and the kindergarten just or the daycare just got launched into space or whatever. But, you know?
Yeah.
Well, what are some specific episodes that jump out at anybody?
Let me look at my list.
So I don't remember. I specifically remember is the terrible one.
Oh,
which one? Which one is that?
Which one? There's one just like it on Stargate.
You're talking about Code of Honor.
Yeah. And just and that's mostly because of how terrible it is, and the fact that there's one almost exactly like it on Stargate. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know the one you're talking about with the Asian actor, right?
The one on Stargate was they're supposed to be Mongols or Mongolians, emancipation, but written by the same writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whoa.
She basically just wrote the same episode for Stargate that she'd already written.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, and to me, I mean, we've talked about Code of Honor before plenty of times, but to me, it's such a missed opportunity because they're going out of their way to give jobs and, you know, acting credits on a big franchise show to a lot of African-American actors. But then they dress them like they're in I Dream of Jeannie.
Yes.
And have them chasing a white lady around. You know?
Yes.
It's such a missed opportunity that if it was just a planet, where everyone happens to be black. Well, great. Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's a lot of, you know, good credits on the resume for all these actors and a good week's pay.
Yeah.
And for those old enough, Lutan, the leader, sounds like the Coca-Cola, I mean, the 7-Up guy from back in the day. The guy that would go, 7-Up, young cola. He sounds just like that. Right. I was listening to another podcast discuss Code of Honor one time. They made a very good point. They said that if you read the script and if it was done as a radio play without some of the unfortunate accents, you wouldn't feel as bad about it. It's kind of the visuals and everything that make it even worse.
But
she did do some weird stuff, and it just happens sometimes if you don't understand the culture. Like, these people are so advanced that they have biomedical engineering beyond the Federation, yet then they act like the holodeck is magic. And they have their own transporters. It's magic. It's magic. What the heck? I mean, it was just, it may be you don't have the technology, but acting like a primitive confronted by a laser gun. Yeah, it's just an unfortunate show.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd think they just rolled up on Skull Island and the natives came on board, with the guy's act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one that I liked. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, that was a bad one. You got a good one?
Well, one that is thought of as a bad one that I always really enjoyed. It's a fun episode, is The Naked Now.
Episodes. Oh, yeah.
It gives a chance to see them act oddly. And I have read one of the criticisms is that it's so early in the run that the viewers don't really have a chance to feel what the norm is yet on these characters. So it seems odd. But still, you know, it gave us that classic scene that Keith quoted. and that scene would, a bit of a spoiler, come to play in a second season episode, in a plot a little bit. Yeah. You know, it might be the first of the Wesley saves the ship, but, you know, it's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's so it's a little, right. But, no, actually, it's a fun episode. I never turn it off when I see it. I cackle at it, and it's, and the worst thing that the show could be is boring, and this episode is far from boring.
True.
Yeah, I like the episode as a watch. I don't know that it was the best choice for the first episode after the pilot to be a remake of an original series episode.
Right.
Because, I mean, I didn't care at the time because I was in like the first grade. But I mean, if you're a fan who's watching, who's already skeptical about the show, you watch the pilot, which has a character who's quite a bit like Trelane from the original series. And then literally the next episode is just a remake of an original series episode. I mean, if like Discovery's second episode had been a remake of a Next Gen episode, people would still be talking about that. You know, like I think that's a strange choice to make. But I agree with you, too, that, yeah, I think that if people had a better idea of the characters, I think it has more impact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's more fun to watch now because you know the characters more than you would have in 1987.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I always found interesting about that episode, too, is to the point you're making, Matt, about, and Charles, about it being early in the season, was The Naked Time was also early in the original series. Maybe not as early, but it was very early in the show. But it's frankly just a better written and acted episode. And I think that they were still, you know, as we know, there was huge turnover. I think you guys talking about the behind the scenes. I think TNG had like almost a record turnover of writers and showrunners in the first season or two. Mm-hmm. But frankly, it's just not as well written as The Naked Time. Right. I think they could have pulled it off, but it just wasn't as well written and as well acted. And I think that hurt it as well. It also didn't hurt that, they had those video effects in the first season, which I kind of can't stand.
Yeah, the heart of The Naked Time is Spock's breakdown and Kirk's struggle.
Yeah.
And I don't think you really get that in The Naked Now. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Spock's breakdown to this day is powerful to watch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me circle and grab a couple of comments real quick before, because I got a little bit behind on them. Sci-Fi Queen says, Starfleet is 100% military. Based on the confrontations and battles and having families on a ship is questionable.
Disagree.
Sci-Fi Queen, it's a peacekeeping armada.
And then Sci-Fi Queen also said, it's because these ships face battle that makes having families questionable.
Yeah, same here.
Tiger Blade 2002 says, I'm sort of with you, Sci-Fi Queen, but just about all Earthbound expeditions going into unexplored territory have had military escorts. And then Sci-Fi Queen said, Code of Honor was the worst episode, so racist. And the hair, what's with the Jerry curls they gave the women?
Oh, if you think those Jerry curls are bad, you should see some of the previews of LeVar Burton, some of the hairstyles they tried with Jordy.
Tiger Blade 2002 says about Code of Honor was not about the racism, but the fact that it looked like it took place at Studio 54. Those outfits, come on.
Especially the battle cube that they with the like dancer poles on it and stuff.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yep. And Sci-Fi Queens agreed about the disco outfits. Now an episode that I think gets a lot of flack that I actually really enjoy. Mm-hmm. Was the introduction of the Ferengi.
Oh, like the last outpost, right?
Yeah, the last outpost.
Ooh, laser whips.
we're going almost like straight down the first episodes.
Yeah, I like the laser whips. I know they're not the most practical weapon, but at least it's different from just a phaser. But every time like mm-hmm. one of the new shows brings back the laser whips, I'm just delighted.
Yeah. I prefer the other major Ferengi episode of the season, the battle, but, and it did struggle to kind of portray them because it felt like they wanted, because they were also name dropped in the encounter at Farpoint. Mm-hmm. So it felt like they really wanted the Ferengi to be the big baddie.
Yeah.
They did.
And I think it was wise to use them as it turned out they did. And of course they became major part of Deep Space Nine. But they were much better used, I think, once they figured out they were more sort of like kind of an independent, exploration of what capitalism at its worst could be, mm-hmm. but not evil, not necessarily entirely antagonistic to the Federation. Just right. They had their own, their own mm-hmm. desires and such.
They're capitalists.
Yeah. And it's funny that the season, like you say, sort of paints them as the big bad.
Yeah.
But the episode makes no effort to make them big and bad.
No, they are small and tiny.
They're immediately comedic as soon as they come on screen.
Yes.
And yeah, especially when they do the, is that a human female?
The hissing and stuff. Like, no one could possibly have shot that in 87 and thought like, oh yeah, this is going to scare them. You know?
Yeah. Is that also the one where they do like the big close up on the Ferengi and so it's like all you see is the mouth and it's like, back up. That's
well, on the view screen, I think that makes a lot of sense because they're trying to be intimidating.
True.
It sort of sets up a reveal for when you see them and they're this high, you know?
I know, but...
but I also like in that episode that I like the subplot with the ship being out of power, and I like the mysterious guy on the planet who's from the ancient civilization. You know, I just think all that works.
Another one of those old one races. One thing I like about that episode, which I remember more than the laser whips, and they didn't incorporate it much, was when they were examining the energy beam that was holding the ship, and there was a cool hologram in the ready room, and you saw this little lightning coming up from the planet hitting the ship. It's one of those things where you know in the future they'd have displays like that, but in a real life series in our time, they can't make displays like that. Right. So it was kind of cool seeing. And also, I forget, was Armin Shimmerman one of the Ferengi? Mm-hmm. So Quark was there.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we go any further, let's go ahead and take a quick break for a couple of commercials. And then when we get back, we'll continue with our discussion of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1. All right, monkeying around, start talking. About your podcast.
We talk about an Emmy-winning comedy series.
We talk about a band who outsold Beatles and the Stones in 1967.
Still sticking to that story, huh? Well, if you know what's good for you, you'll change your tune.
We talk about a groundbreaking multimedia project
that inspired generations of artists and fans.
All right, throw the book at them.
This book is overdue.
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
And we're back.
Hey.
Talking with Matt and Elaine Sweatman from Elaine and Matt Watch TV about Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm saying that as if someone's joining us in progress. Just in case we were preempted by the sports.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about The Next Generation. It's established a lot of what we now think of as the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
I mean, and even to the point where you get our first real Klingon episode, our modern Klingon episode. They've been introduced in the movies. Well, they were introduced in the series, but the newer version was introduced in the movies and has featured prominently in Star Trek III. But I mean, here we get the first real like next generation era Klingon episode. So what did we think of it?
It broke up a really big string of bad episodes. When Heart of Glory came up, I said, yes, okay, now we can get back to the series.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think to the praise of the series, it did a good job of being consistent in how they portrayed the Klingons, probably even better than the original series did. They had a consistent ethos, a consistent and some of the most memorable characters, in addition to Worf, of course, we see later on, come from the Klingons. So they are one of the better successes, I think, of the Next Generation overall. And I think Heart of Glory planted that seed very well. In a very, very modest episode, not nearly as ambitious as what they would go on to do with the Klingons, but a good setup for them in the Next Generation.
What did you think of it, Elaine?
I'm trying to remember bits and pieces of it. There were so many episodes.
That's the one where the Klingons killed their own people, and they wanted to steal the Enterprise and basically go out in a blaze of glory because they thought
that's
Klingon
right.
Empire.
Oh, yeah.
And introduced the Klingon the Death Cry.
Yes.
That episode, and there was like another episode or two where it was like, oh, these are where all the memes come from. I get it now. Yeah.
You're like, I recognize that scene.
Yeah. I liked it.
I really liked it. It painted the Klingons as still being kind of awe-inspiring, you know?
Yes.
Where they see there's a Klingon ship on the screen and it's like, whoa, the Klingons, you know?
Yeah.
And I really like that sequence where they take just like bits off their belts and boots and things and build a disruptor out of it.
That was great.
And I love that one security guy who's like, I got it. You don't got it.
they haven't learned since Khan that you don't put one security guy like right outside the door or whatever. You have somebody down the hall to blast the guy who breaks out.
I saw a meme one time that had a shot of that security guard.
Yeah.
And the Klingons on the inside the brig, and he's ready to go. And it was like, you got this, Carl. Today's your day. All right. Sci-Fi Queen says, we get Klingons as allies, not enemies. And all Klingon episodes are great.
They do tend to be.
Yeah. The Klingon episodes are fun. I mean, watching the shows back when it was week to week in the 90s, you always look forward. Oh, next week's a Klingon episode. Like, you always look forward to Klingon episodes.
Yeah. And I think you guys are right about Matt and Bush are saying about them establishing kind of a tone, because before that, they just basically changed the look of the Klingons. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before. If you think about the three Klingons that are kind of the prototypes from the original series, which would be Kang, Kor, and
Koloth.
There's Kang, there's Kor, who was kind of he was brutal, but he had fun with it. He was the good day to die kind of Klingon. Mm-hmm. And then these are much more like Kang. Kang is really intense. Kang is just that Klingon. Mm-hmm. And I like at the end of that episode, the captain of that ship, his voice and just the way he spoke. Like when he said to Picard, he basically said, you know, paraphrase, you guys need help because these are Klingons. I don't know if you can handle it. And they were kind of. Yeah. And when Worf says, basically, don't take them back and execute them as criminals, send them to some planet, let them die with a weapon in their hand. I love that thing when he says, you know, we are all diminished when someone dies that way. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like in that episode how they're all a little, maybe not unsure, but a little side-eyed at Worf to see where his loyalties are going.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You know? Which, I mean, was a big thing because Worf was, you know, famously the first Klingon who was in Starfleet and the first on a Star Trek show. The Klingons had been the famous enemies from the original series. Mm-hmm. And now here's a Klingon in the crew. So, I mean, how well do you think that works as far as Worf in season one?
They kind of forget he's there the first part of the season, which makes sense because he was a late addition to the cast. So they didn't really write for him until later in the season. In fact, Heart of Glory, I think, was kind of his breakout episode.
Right.
He had to get Tosh out of the way so he could have a position on the bridge. So, you know, that helped too, I think.
Yeah, he seems to be sort of an extra guy on the bridge. Like, yeah. His job is to sort of stand around and, like, take a station when someone has to go, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, what did we think of Michael Dorn's portrayal of Worf in that first season?
I thought he was good, but, I mean, I don't know what I was going to say. It went away. No, I think he did a great job, and they cast it really well, you know.
Yeah.
And it was fun watching the behind the scenes stuff of him, like, getting ready and trying to, you know, with the hair, because I know his hair kind of had some changes throughout the seasons. And right. One, he was like, yeah, they're giving me the Donna Reed hairdo. Can I have a I'm like, you know, I'm glad they figured out how to do his hair. But yeah. And he's like, if you say Klingon to me, out of all the series, all the years, he's the one that I think of. He's the first one I'll think of.
Yeah.
So,
I love Worf. I've said this before on the show that I love Worf, but it is fun to see him in the early episodes when his makeup's more primitive, but also the way he portrayed Worf was, yes, sir. You know, he had that very much. He's doing a Klingon. He let that go as the years. I mean, he probably had to, because that's got to be terrible to maintain. His voice becomes more natural as he goes along.
Well, and then to see how he changed, or how they changed him in Picard, how he's just way more mellow. He's still tough, but he just found himself and everything. That's cool to see.
Let me grab a couple of comments real quick, or a few. Tiger Blade 2002 says, in that episode, was not ready for the death yell. Yikes.
Yes. Yes.
Sci-Fi Queen says, Klingons rule my heart. And Michael Dorn, a.k.a. my king. Tiger Blade 2002 says, he spent the first season basically saying, I am a Klingon. And Sci-Fi Queen says, Worf is King Klingon, LOL.
I think somebody likes Worf.
And it's me.
One of the things that I didn't realize this about Worf at the time, but he was, because he was raised by humans like Alexander was, but he like got into the Klingon culture. So he learned Klingon from books. So Klingons were like, he learned how to be Klingon from reading basically Klingon romance novels, not actual Klingon romance novels, but it's he like overdid everything. And I really liked how they like, portrayed that in Lower Decks with the Orion that basically did the same thing. It's like, I'm an Orion, look at me. And and that was a lot how Worf was in season one as well. And I like how they eventually mellowed him out, and he wasn't quite so much, I'm a Klingon.
Yeah, it's kind
like
of
Wayne
like,
said.
Yeah, it's like you're learning to be, say, a Christian or something from a book. And then you actually go and join a mega church and find out that, I mean, just people being people, there are a lot of people who don't live up to the standards they set for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the Klingons were the same way, where Worf is more Klingon than the Klingons. The Klingons are like, hey, lighten up, dude.
Yeah.
Very much.
Okay.
I was going to say real quick, and I find what's interesting, we talk about Worf and the Klingon. One of the things that kind of added, and I think Matt had touched on it, is they weren't sure if Michael Dorn was going to stay around. I mean, it was, and the other cast didn't know, because it was a weird kind of experiment. And as you say, Denise Crosby was kind of sort of in the way as the security chief. And so I think it kind of adds to a sense where he's slightly apart from the rest of the crew. As you were saying, Charles, they weren't quite sure where his loyalties lay. And then when Denise Crosby left, unfortunately for her, but great for Michael Dorn. And then, as you guys probably know, Ronald D. Moore came onto the show, the guy who was behind what everything, Battlestar Galactica, For All Mankind. And he was the Klingon guy for years. He wrote the Bible for the Klingon, and it worked really well.
Well, let's talk about some of the other characters as well. I mean, because we have a lot of characters in Next Gen who are very different in season one. Data leaps to mind. What do we think about season one Data?
He's still hilarious.
He's very sweet and innocent.
Yes.
You know, and I don't remember what episode it is, but they played a little clip of it in one of the special feature things, and it cracks me up. He's laughing, like they're telling a joke, and it's like, oh, I'm supposed to laugh. And he starts laughing, and it's an absurd laugh. And then all of a sudden he stops and then just lurks away. And I'm like, because it's like, ha, 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 ha. And that cracked me up.
We also love the scene, and not speaking for Elaine here, because I know she loved it too, where they're having the bickering at the about wedding plans with Loxana and her group. And he's like, oh, could you please continue the pointless bickering?
Right.
Well, because he's learning. He's trying to learn how to be human. And so he wants to hear people bicker and fight and everything. Mm-hmm. I like also the conversation he has with Riker when they go into the holodeck and they end up saving Wesley because he's fallen into the water. And Riker's like, and he's like, I'm an android. Did that bother you? And Riker's like, yeah, that kind of unnerved me a little bit. And he's like, I'm just trying to be as human as I can be. You know, don't be scared of me. So I thought that was kind of a cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They mentioned in the special features that they had a decision on whether to make him like completely robotic.
Yeah.
Or I think Brent really, he wanted some sense of humor to it. There is,
yes.
He does a brilliant job of remaining unemotional, but yet putting an underlying bit of humor or even sentimentality to
mm-hmm.
Data,
mm-hmm.
It's really one of the better performances, and I would say he probably found his character maybe a little quicker than some of the other actors did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and he had to at Tasha Yar's memorial, because that was a mm-hmm. new thing. It's like, okay, why this is bothering me, but why is it? I don't like. He had a hard time understanding that whole thing. Like, why are we doing this and mm-hmm. everything? So that was, yeah, he had a lot of growth to do, like he had more room to grow from where he started anyway.
And when you first saw, like me, and probably many of us, when you first saw my first exposure to Brent Spiner was that goofy character on Night Court who showed up every now and then.
Who was coming back, by the way.
Yes. Seeing him as Data was pretty good. I like Data, to be nitpicky. And this is what you have to do. Like you said, Matt, he was, you know, you could go completely emotionless. But since we're humans who detect emotion, no emotionless character ever really works for us, even if they should be like that in a real life. I've always had some problems with Data but I know they do it for the drama. Data's been in Starfleet for 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
And he still says some of the dumbest things, and he doesn't understand things that he absolutely should understand by now. Right. So that drives me a little crazy. Fake it even if you can't make it. And the other thing is, again, you go with it, but I love to talk about it because it's goofy. The man has like 100 people's memories inside of him. He has whatever that weird storage they created for the future, gigaquads and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he can't say can't. And he can't say don't. It makes no sense. And I would love somebody to go up to Data and say, Worf just had a fit. What did he do? He did a rant. A horse runs at a certain gallop. What do you call it? You call it a can't. What is the formula of a line? You call a slant. But he can't say can't. It makes no sense to me, but it is what it is, you know.
Yeah. Now, it could just be that Dr. Sung programmed him that way deliberately.
Yeah.
Because Data Lore is in season one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Because that was a thing with Data Lore, was that the colonists didn't like Lore. And so he made another android that was less human than Lore was. So it could be that Dr. Sung just gave him that to separate him a little bit from seeming.
Yeah,
sort of reduce that uncanny valley a bit for the colonists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and it sounds more stilted and robotic to mm-hmm. say cannot, well, instead of using contractions.
Yeah.
Speaking of Lore, did y'all like that Evil Brothers first appearance? Because he was way over the top. But did you like him?
But I knew of him from like watching Picard and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, and the memes. Yeah, that was a good episode, but I was kind of like, I was wondering why people didn't figure it out sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, the crew were really obtuse about that. Like Wesley Crusher was like, dude, that's not Data, and it was obvious to everybody else, but everybody was like, shut up, Wesley.
I would love to see a sci-fi series where someone's just acting weird one day and someone just immediately phasers them.
Oh, that'd be great.
They're possessed or they're replaced or something.
Now, that's a very short track that I would watch.
Right.
That's a good idea. That one I would do.
Where were we when they
did it? No more shit.
All right. Let's grab a few comments real quick. Sci-Fi Queen says, I agree with Keith on that point about Data. Tiger Blade 2002 said, "I'd give it all up to be more human." Best Data quote.
Pinocchio. Yeah. Good point, Wayne. Yeah.
A little bit ago, Sci-Fi Queen says, "We need a Klingon series."
Heck yes. Michael Dorn's all ready to go.
And also said, "Never cared for Tasha Yar, so I was happy Worf got to step up when she died."
That's a very good comment.
I was going to say, I didn't mind her so much, but my issue was I don't like how they killed her off. Mm. It was a stupid way to die. That's not a way that you would have thought she would have, because at the beginning of that episode, she's talking about doing all her fighting skills and when can she meet up Worf to go over like black belt stuff. And then she gets slimed or whatever and that's how she dies. I'm like, no, I know she wanted to leave the show. So give her like this blaze of glory, huge fiery death or something, not. Whatever that, no, that, I, that's the one thing I hated. I'm like, kill her off better than that, please.
Their intention, and I agree with you, it didn't work. Their intention was to show that on a job like that, it could come at a moment's notice. And that sometimes you don't get a glorious battle.
Yeah.
Or death. But I agree. It was clunky. About that. The whole episode was clunky to me. Something about, I don't know, Armus. We talked about this recently. Armus is a good concept.
Right.
It didn't get executed very well. Mm-hmm.
I have no memory of that episode whatsoever, even though I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm.
But I have no memory of it.
Well, sorry we're spoiling the end of it for you.
Because it was like all of a sudden she gets thrown and it's like, wait, that's it? She's dead? And also they like killed her off in like the first third of the episode. And it was like,
That weird splotch they put on her face when she was on the deathbed. I'm like, it's just random to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
So do y'all think it was the writing or was it possibly Denise Crosby's acting? And I'm not saying she's a bad actress, but Tasha Yar as written was very, she was much more sedate than a security chief, I would think. She didn't register her presence, even the way she spoke. She was kind of soft-spoken, and her dialogue was clunky. So was it just that they didn't know how to write her quite yet?
In season
one, they didn't know how to write anyone quite yet. I've heard people have said, that Tasha Yar sucks. Well, in season one, everyone kind of sucked. No one on Next Gen is as good as they would become. I would love to have seen what Tasha Yar could have become over that seven seasons. But I would not trade that for Worf being the security officer because that is just too perfect. And that's just, that's Next Gen to me, is that Worf is at the security station.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm not saying that she shouldn't have left or shouldn't have gotten killed off. I just, the way that it was written, the way it was done, the way that just, for it to be the big character death of the season, it was very underwhelming, right. Like, I was like, oh, okay, she's dead. I'm supposed to feel sad now. It was like, Data, I'm supposed to feel sad now? What do I do? Okay. So, yeah.
All right, let's grab a couple of comments real quick. Tigerblade 2002 says, Keith's statement about Data. I can understand Data completely. Sounds like my life.
And Wayne, I was thinking that as well because, but the thing about Data is he has a perfect memory. And he should have he should have been learning those things as he goes along. So it's not like humans where we'll forget that we learned this thing.
Yeah.
Data should not be forgetting that he learned this thing. So I feel like that, yes, I understand Data and I know how a lot of people could relate to him,
but
Data should have been able to remember those things that he already learned, and he should have learned many, many, many of those things.
Yeah, because I think because I know I have relatives and stuff who are on the spectrum, and Data to a certain extent acts like someone who's on the spectrum because he's in ways cannot truly feel human emotion. But I also know people with children who have autism and so forth, and after a while, whether they kind of feel it or not, they kind of know how to act in a certain way. And that's the thing with Data. Like sometimes he would literally ask questions like, Data, seriously. Also, and another thing, again, I know I'm getting way too deep in a show, but the dude is the third in command of the Federation flagship. Mm-hmm. That means that no matter what they say, we know what comes up later about is he a human or not. That means that this man has gone through Starfleet Academy, and for 20 years, he's led away teams. He's been on other ships. He has been deemed good enough to possibly command the starship, the flagship. Yep. There's no way he'd be that incompetent with people at that level. That, again, that's a whole other thing. Well, it makes the show work.
it's kind of like Wesley Crusher, where they're writing data as if he's fresh out of the lab, even though that doesn't jive with the backstory.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Right.
If he had just come off the assembly line and they put him on the starship to go learn about the universe, then that would make sense that he's like Snoop, you know, and he doesn't know basic things.
I don't mean this to be facetious, but I do wonder what Lore would have been as some kind of commander. I mean, would he just like kill people all the time? Or would he be like that really cool commander that you don't want to mess with just into the war?
Kind of like a Lorca.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Or would he just say no?
All right. We're getting short on time. Let me grab a couple of comments real quick. Sci-Fi Queen says Tasha Yar had a hard backstory, and yes, the writing is tough, but she is not a good actress. You won't say it, but I will.
Okay.
And Tigerblade 2002 says not feeling emotion and autism, total falsehood.
We can get into a whole nother show on that.
Yeah. Neurodivergence, agreed.
Yeah. So I mean, go ahead.
I'm sorry, real quick. In the clear way, and I didn't say, I wasn't saying that autistic people don't feel it, but what I meant was the way they portrayed data was exactly how people think people on the spectrum act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
that is
the
stereotypical.
The
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well, let's get some overall final thoughts about Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1. We've got just a few minutes.
I know, right, Matt? Wow. That was a quick hour.
I know. We're running out of time already. So, I mean, who wants to jump out first with some final thoughts on Next Gen Season 1?
I'm really glad that they did it and got it out there, and we have all this other Star Trek because of it.
Absolutely. Okay.
I enjoyed it, and to think they told the cast of The New Monkeys that they weren't going to last.
I know, right?
Okay.
I love it.
Well, the cast pretty much didn't think this was going to last more than a year or maybe two. I mean, when you in interviews, and they all by a person say, we never thought this was going to catch on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it did. And we didn't talk about conspiracy. We didn't talk about binars. I mean, my goodness.
so much. Yeah. I'll follow up what Matt said. Because Patrick Stewart, who I think you know legendarily, Gene Roddenberry did not want Patrick Stewart as Picard. I mean, that man, he met him in person for lunch. He didn't like him. He didn't like anything about him. There's a whole thing about they put a hair piece on. It just goes on and on and on. Patrick Stewart didn't even unpack for several months when he was filming the show. Right. And his agent in London at the time, he goes, I don't want to go to the United States. He goes, man, it's not going to last. You go, you get some money, you make some contacts, you come back to England, you go back, you do Shakespeare. And there are 7 years later, there he is. Yeah. But it just shows, you know, like we say, the original series, we said this many times, the original series is an anomaly. The show came out the gate being awesome. That's an anomaly.
Yeah.
All the other shows took time to build. And I'm glad Veronica said, I'm glad they gave Next Gen the chance to grow because it was rough that first season, but it had all the seeds of a great series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of potential in that first season. And they had to figure out how to do Star Trek again, where everyone wants it to be the same, but different. And everyone has a different opinion about what that should be. But also, like you said before, they had a lot of behind the scenes turnover. And I think a lot of ways Next Generation, the first season or two, feels more like the original series to me in some ways. I don't think it's as good. The drama isn't as good, but just the way it's staged and shot feels more like an 80s version of the original series than, you know, as it grew into the 90s. I think it sort of took on its own identity even more, but as I said at the top, I'm partial to the first season of Next Gen. There's not a lot of episodes that I would hold up against like the classics of all time Star Trek, but I just think it's fun to watch, and it's just a very charming show.
Matt mentioned Conspiracy. That's one that I think is an excellent show. It's like, it's almost like that was a different group of people writing and directing that episode, and so they had these flashes of brilliance. Another one real quick, and I forget the names. One, Picard goes into the holodeck, and he's Dixon Hill.
The Big Goodbye.
Yeah, that's another one that people will cite as, wow, that seems like an anomaly from that season. It's like the quality goes up in that episode. Yeah. That's a very good episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I may have said this on the podcast before, and you mentioned Conspiracy. When I was watching through the episodes when I was I'd seen them when they aired, but I was pretty young. And so when I was probably like 10 or 11, I was going back through and watching them on tape, all my uncle's tapes. And so I would read the back to see what the description was. And I got to Conspiracy, and it said, you know, Picard discovers a conspiracy inside Starfleet. And I was like, ugh, and skipped it. And so I later came back and watched it, and it's awesome.
It is. It also gives you guys, Elaine, you talked about memes. Conspiracy also gave a meme that unfortunately persisted with Worf, was what Worf got his butt kicked a lot. Because they're like, oh, he's the toughest guy, but then they're making him look like a wimp because everybody was beating up on Worf. But that, it's funny when that old man is kicking Worf.
Yeah,
and then he's laughing. It's great. And then Riker comes in and does this awesome jump kick. It's amazing.
Right. And I do really like how Riker is sort of like a Kirk type figure.
Yeah.
He's like the Kirk.
Yeah.
I think that's a smart thing that you make. You give it an older authority figure, and then you have a young Kirkish figure, so you still have that in the show, but with a different dynamic than what you had in the original series.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's easier to, like, poke fun at himself. Like, Kirk was way too serious for that. Like, I don't remember the episode, but where he's all dressed up in this nazzy shirt that cut down to here, and then
it's that horrible I think it's Angel One, that horrible Angel
yeah
One,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
the planet,
yeah,
of the women, that
we didn't think about it. We should also address that way for the show this week.
No.
y'all don't want to see that. No.
was that also the one where all the women were running around in bikini?
No, that was Justice.
Justice.
Ooh. Yeah, that's another bad one. That's another awful one.
Yeah. Oh, they showed it.
See, we can talk so much about these shows, guys.
I know. Oh, so much.
Justice, an episode where Tasha Yar and Deanna Troi and Dayton, everybody's like, they didn't say anything about a death penalty for stepping on the planet. It's like, what the hell? You didn't ask when you went down to the planet? Hey, we got one law.
With a 16-year-old told the girl in the Skippy outfit, I'm not allowed to play the grown-up games.
Yeah.
some of his hand gestures.
They were edited
in the gag reel they showed. And they made something very different in the gag reel than what they...
And last thing I'm going to say, Charles, you were saying how it's so much like the original series. Do you remember one of their engineers, because they have rotating engineers, one of their engineers was Scottish. And they were in the first season. They were really, because they couldn't get, they wanted that guy. It was, I forget his name, but he was a Scottish dude. Right. Then they had the lady in the naked nail. And then, as we all know, this is definitely not a spoiler, Geordi moves from the bridge down to engineering. But they had this whole rotating thing. But I remember they had a Scottish engineer. It's like, boy, you really are trying, aren't you?
Well, I think they foreshadowed Geordi becoming an engineer because it seemed like he took every opportunity to run down the engineering anytime he could. So it was clear that was where his interests lie. He didn't care as much about flying the ship. Said, no, I'm going down there.
It's a smart catch by the producers that Geordi has a boring job on the ship because the ship basically flies itself.
Yeah.
It's like, why it's like he's awesome down there. Like, why isn't he the engineer?
Yeah. That's why they eventually put Wesley there.
Yeah.
That's where they let him go.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Now, I assume you guys are going to go move on and watch season two.
Yes.
Of course.
Okay. Yes. So we're going to be tied up with talking about Discovery for a while. So hopefully after Discovery, I hope you guys will come back and we'll recap about season two.
Yeah.
And now I know. On some of your previous season watches, Matt, you've gone through and ranked them on the Earth Station Trek Facebook. I don't want to put you on the spot, but can we look forward to that this time?
Yeah, I've written like the introductory one, but I want to write a few of the reviews before I start on that because once I commit to it, I try to do one a day, so I want to be sure I can keep it. Time's been a little bit tricky lately. But yeah, I've ranked the episodes, I've watched them. I have the ranking.
Okay.
I just have to write the little mini reviews that goes along with each one.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, like you guys said, this feels too short to cover this season of television. If you're not a part of our Facebook group, I mean, jump on there. And when Matt starts doing his ranking, you can follow along and comment. You can also check out the Elaine and Matt Watch TV Facebook group, whether you can go back to their little watch-alongs. They have a watch-along for every one of the episodes and add your comments.
And it's hilarious.
Yes, I have lots of witty comment to make about the episode.
And I gotta get out of this real bad habit I've been getting where I don't see y'all's TV watch till like 7 o'clock at work the next morning. So you get like 10 comments from me at 7 a.m. because I'm at work.
They don't have to set an alarm the next day. They just wait. All right, Matt, where can people find more of you?
Well, as you mentioned, we are on Elaine and Matt Watch TV Facebook page. One day we hope to maybe make it into a podcast. That's primarily where you can find me at the moment. I'm gonna try to follow up. I actually did not release a countdown for the animated series. I kind of dropped the ball on that one. But Next Generation, I'm more familiar with the episodes of the animated series, so I feel a little bit more have more interesting things to say about these. So I'm gonna do one for the Next Generation seasons.
Cool. That's why people have been snubbing the animated series for 40 years. So,
I'm kidding. This one.
All right, Elaine, where can people find more of you?
You can find me on Elaine and Matt What TV. You can also find me monkeying around.
What's that?
It's a podcast about the monkey.
Hey!
Yay! On monkeying around Facebook, monkeying around Twitter. And yes, that's it. Yeah.
And how about you, Keith?
You can find me on X and Facebook, primarily the ESO Network Facebook groups.
And how about us, Veronica?
FeltNerdy.com, which is actually a website now.
That's true. And you can go on there and find photos of our shows. You can find an upcoming schedule of our appearances. You can find a link to book us if you are interested in paying to have a puppet show perform someplace. But also, you can follow Felt Nerdy on Facebook, on YouTube, on Instagram. And also, if you prefer more adult content, we also do burlesque shows. And now we just recently launched our own show called the Felt Nerdy and Dirty Show at the Red Light Cafe, which you can find at Felt Nerdy and Dirty on all the social media platforms, including YouTube now, because we actually have footage of several of our latest performances that we've been slowly uploading.
Yeah.
And where else can people find us?
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
That's right.
You didn't do the little arm thing, Elaine.
No.
For people that are just listening, I do a little arm thing. Just go watch it just on YouTube and listen to the whole episode on YouTube again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can see my arm thing.
Okay.
And do you have a closing for us this week?
Crap. I don't know how 3 years that I do this every time.
I know.
Engage.
Hey, perfect. That's well, it's the line from season one. Thank you to you guys for joining us again. And thank you to everybody for watching or listening. Join us next Thursday. We go live on Thursday evenings talking about the latest Star Trek episode, which we'll be doing when Discovery comes back. But until then, about some interesting legacy Star Trek topics.
Thanks, all. Thanks for participating.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun on our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.